Champions.
We are the best at sitting in a comfy chair and telling the entire sports world what they should have done and what they should be doing later. Putting it simply,
we are the champions, my friends. And we'll keep on fighting till the end.
All right, everybody. Hello and welcome to the Armchair Champions NBA podcast. And I have a confession to make. I say that I'm the best at sitting in a comfy chair. I'm not sitting in a comfy chair right now.
Nope.
I'm sitting in a pretty uncomfortable chair, to be honest, actually.
Not a comfy chair in sight.
Yeah, well, actually, there is one in sight, but it's over there, and I can't sit in it while I do this podcast, so.
Our audience will just have to deal with it.
I hope y'all are sitting in a comfy chair, because that's what's important, is the audience. But my name is Jason Walker, and I'm here with
Evan Hall.
And we're going to give you everything National Basketball Association, because it's on. It's on like Donkey Kong. I am super pumped. And if you're also NFL fans, you can check out our NFL podcast, which will also be up. You can go check that out. But we're going to get right into the NBA, and we're going to talk about the hot topic, the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yep.
Just
red
kidding.
Hot.
Red hot. Everybody loves them. Okay, now, really, we're going to talk about what you already know, and that is that the Warriors got slaughtered by the Spurs.
In
California.
Oakland?
Yeah, in Oakland. Their home stadium, at home. They got slaughtered by the Spurs.
Opening night.
Yeah, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant, he called the game a slap in the face, and he is exactly right. It's kind of like me coming over and saying, hey, you're going to win the World Series, and then I'm going to smack you in the face and say, not really. Except that's not entirely accurate. Because the Cubs might actually win the World Series.
Hopefully.
And the Warriors might actually win the NBA Finals. We don't know. But this highlighted a few things that are probably wrong with the Warriors. They're obviously not the same team from last year. I heard there was one analyst who was describing, and I believe he was right on, and that they've added to their strengths and they've subtracted from their weaknesses, and that's not necessarily a good thing to do. Because their weakness was size and their strength was shooting. So who do they bring in? Kevin Durant. Who do they let go? Andrew Bogut and Festus Ezeli. But we're going to get into size later. And we're first going to talk about the first reason they really got killed and why I believe that we're going to see a similar trend for the next little while. And I'm not saying the Warriors are going to lose every game, but they're going to have some struggles. And I'm not the only one who's saying this. Everybody's saying it now. Some people predicted it. I kind of saw it coming. I wasn't super vocal about it. But you saw this with the Heat back in 2010. They struggled coming out of the gate. You put three superstars together that have never played together, they need to build some chemistry. And you're going to see it with the Warriors. They have to learn to be more unselfish than they were last year. And that was probably a struggle for them too, because they had a lot of guys who could shoot it, a lot of guys who want the ball. Your shooters are only useful when they're shooting the ball. And so when you've only got one ball and five guys on the floor who can shoot it, you might have a problem.
Well, plus it's been a long summer for that team after losing the NBA Finals, after having a record-worthy season. It's been a long summer, so I think that factors into it as well.
Yeah, and there's so much pressure because everybody's saying, well, they're going to kill everybody by 60 every game. Well, apparently not.
At least not the Spurs.
Yeah, not the Spurs. And this is something that I wanted to make note. So when and this goes back to chemistry. When I go play pickup basketball over at the Recreation Center, the Arc, and I can't remember which direction it is from here, but when I go play there, things usually don't go well as far as chemistry. Things, like, for me, I'm 6 foot, 250 pounds, so you can imagine where I generally play. I usually play at the four, sometimes even the five. And the thing is, when we get together, you get five random guys that have never seen them before, don't know how they play basketball, and things can be rough. You don't know what everybody likes to do. And the result is usually not pretty. As far as, you know, if you look at the beauty of the game of basketball. And usually what it ends up being is people jack up three-pointers and I am rendered useless, because for me, to be effective, there's got to be a lot of passing, there's cuts, there's ball movement, there's drive and dish and all that kind of stuff. there's not that, and they're just jacking up threes, I'm completely useless unless they get an offensive rebound, which is one of, like, three skills that I have in basketball. The other one is defensive rebounding, and the last one is kind of shooting layups. Those are my strengths.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how...
Whatever gets the job done.
Yeah. So. Whatever gets done. So you can imagine I would not be very good on the Warriors because they just jack up threes all the time. I wouldn't do very well.
I mean, plus, you know, the chemistry thing. You know, Kevin Durant's on his first new team of his career. I mean, he was with when what is now the Thunder were in Seattle for a little bit there. But, you know, this is a whole new system for him. I guess it's the first time he's been at a different franchise. And so, you know, when your main acquisition over the summer is really new, you know, that's also going to play a part in it.
Yeah, and so there will definitely be an adjustment period, and I do believe that the Warriors will cover. And again, everybody's saying this. I'm like the 375th person to say this, that the Warriors will most likely recover, but it'll take them a while. And by playoff time, we're going to see something of the team that the Warriors were hyped up to be. Maybe not like one of the best teams in history, like some people were saying. Not everybody was saying that. I wasn't saying that.
Oh, but they'll still be good.
Yeah, they'll be good. It's Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and Zaza Pachulia starting. Like, that's good. They're not going to be a team that's missing the playoffs. They're going to be probably the top seed in the West, unless the Spurs beat them to it. Because the Spurs are apparently really dang good this season, based off what we saw in week one. And that's one thing that we've seen with the first game is now it's time to overreact on everything. It's worse than the NFL.
Because game one will tell you everything. No, I'm just kidding.
It's 1/82nd of the entire season. We know exactly what's going on.
Can't screw this up.
It's analytics, guys. All right. So we're going to go on to the next one. And this is a much bigger problem for the Warriors. I've already said it. It's much bigger than chemistry because you can fix chemistry. You can't teach size. And that is so cliche it hurts, but it's so true. They let 2 7-footers go. I was counting the minutes for their big men, and I'm trying to look at it. Their biggest guys, their centers, Zaza Pachulia, JaVale McGee, and Anderson Varejao, they played a total of 27 minutes. 20 of those went to Zaza Pachulia. It means their two other close to 7-footers played 7 minutes between each other. Their power forwards, Draymond Green, David West, they played 44. Those were their two big men that basically played the entire game. David West is old and fat. Draymond Green, yeah, he's good, but he's not a center. He's a power forward. He's a power forward, sometimes masquerading as a center. And the Warriors got out-rebounded 55-34. I can get more rebounds than that sometimes.
Well, it was sad on both defensive and offensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, San Antonio just had a night getting those second chances and then getting the ball back. And through those rebounds, San Antonio just created every opportunity they needed to win. And, you know, if you don't have the ball, you can't score.
Yeah, you can't shoot the ball when you don't have it, exactly. And one thing I noticed is that Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, they combined, they had 22 of the 34 rebounds for Golden State. So when they're not on the floor, the rest of your team got 12 rebounds. That's ridiculous.
Which isn't going to – and it's not going to cut it, yeah. Especially in the playoffs.
Yeah, so. It'll never cut it. That was one of those things. That's why Oklahoma City almost beat the Warriors. It's why a lot of people are thinking maybe the Jazz will push the Warriors a little bit when they play them. Is that the Jazz have size. The Thunder did have size. They still do, really. And that's going to cause problems because they're going to get out-rebounded like nobody's business against teams that have size. And they're really going to have to make up for it with their shooting. You know, that old 3 points is worth more than 2 points. They're really going to have to rely hard on that three. That kind of brings me to the last point is that in this game, really one of the reasons they lost is because you live by the three. Well, this time they died by the three.
And they did hard.
Yeah, really like, hard.
I mean, I know I've got some stats, but just one of the things I was looking at this morning on my other podcast, the other podcast I work with, looked at the percentage from behind the three-point line. San Antonio shooting 50% behind the three-point line. That's you know, that's good, getting those big threes. Yeah. Golden State, 21%. So one in five attempts makes it. And
they shot 33 of them.
Yeah, and Curry and Durant didn't look so hot from behind the three-point line either.
Yeah.
But it's like there's a 30% difference. And the losing side in that particular battle was the team that built, you know, like you said, lived by the three. And that night, they clearly did not live at all any chance in that game.
And so that's one of the things why you saw the Warriors, they'd go from winning a game to being blown out, is because they do so much that live and die by the three, because when they get behind, well, they use the three to get ahead. If that doesn't work, they get behind. They use the three to get back in the game. They miss it more. They're just getting the heck blown out of them. And they lose by 30 points. And maybe they'll stay in a close game like that game seven. But it's just, if Golden State can't always rely on that three-point shot, they're going to struggle in a lot of games this season. Like I said, they're not going to miss the playoffs or really be a not top three seed, probably not even a not top two seed. But they're going to struggle, and perhaps they're going to struggle in the playoffs. And I could see Steph Curry once again struggling in the playoffs, and if they get to the finals, he'll struggle in the finals again. He's just not a player built for those big moments like that.
Well, yeah, and you know, you go back to the Western Conference Finals last year, then to the finals, and then to this game. Now you're talking teams that are figuring them out. They're figuring out their system. Those shots aren't as intimidating as they once were, I guess. But, you know, you're talking about teams like Oklahoma City, Cleveland, San Antonio. Teams that are good, figuring out this team. And that should be a big red flag going forward, is that you have top playoff and championship contending teams that are figuring out your system, and that's a threat, you know?
And that is something that you bring up a good point, is that teams are smart. They figure you out.
Especially if they play you a lot during the season.
Yeah.
So
you talk about how this works in the NFL, where you had things like the Wildcat, Michael Vick, Tim Tebow, the read option. You can't rely on it forever. And so you wonder, are the Warriors going to fall victim to their own deal because they can't innovate again? They made an innovation to the NBA, and they reaped the benefits by winning a championship and going 73-9. And see, I think you bring up a really excellent point.
Well, they got rid of a couple of their big inside guys over the summer. That was your option, you know? That was your other option in case three-pointers didn't work, but they got rid of them to get Durant.
Yeah, they're putting all their eggs in the three-point basket. No pun intended there, really.
But it works.
It kind of did work. So we'll see what happens. And it'll take them to the regular season, but the playoffs, who knows? All right, so we're going to move on. And this is just kind of a side note, because there isn't a whole lot to talk about here. But I just get this feeling that the media is going to milk the Russell Westbrook versus Kevin Durant cow until the cow is dead and is puking out its innards. And the media will still be trying to milk it.
They've got a bucket and a stool, and they're just going to keep going to town.
They will never, ever stop. 4 years down the road, they're still going to be saying, Westbrook versus Durant. Well, that's assuming Durant's still in the Warriors or something.
If he doesn't go to the Spurs.
He doesn't. Oh, speaking of that, funniest thing I saw on a YouTube comment on a highlight video. It was this guy. He was like, Durant to the refs at halftime. What do you mean I can't join the Spurs at the half? I thought just absolutely hilarious. But anyway, side note.
Yeah, I mean, that. I think the media will eat it up. Probably, in my opinion, it's going to depend on how good the Thunder are without Durant. Whether they're really the contenders that they were with him, you know, because if they meet in the playoffs, that would be pretty sweet as kind of a matchup. But the media, I think the media would love to have this storyline, you know, because it's like prodigal son kind of deal. at least in a sense. But
I wouldn't call it the prodigal son. I'd call it like the villain returns, whatever that is. The
villain returns, whichever one that's from, whichever book that's from. But like I said, this all depends on how good the Thunder will be without Durant. So
yeah, and I'm trying to find the Warriors schedule because I want to know when they play the Thunder, because every media person's going to have that game circled, and I'd imagine Russell Westbrook has that game circled on his schedule, even though he might not tell anybody. But I swear, 2 weeks before, we're going to be seeing, watch Kevin Durant go up against his former ally, Russell Westbrook, in this stunning matchup. And they're going to be asking Russell Westbrook 2 weeks before the game, what are you thinking about that matchup with Kevin Durant 5 games down the road?
Yeah.
Then Russell Westbrook.
Not tonight's game.
Yeah.
But the one later.
And then Russell Westbrook goes all Allen Iverson. What are you talking about this game 6 games down the road? I'm talking about this game. This game.
Six games. I don't know an all-star who thinks about 6 games. I don't know a Hall of Famer who thinks about 6 games.
I'm thinking about this game. Yeah. Please, Russell Westbrook, if you heard that, please do that when they ask you that, because I hate snobby media. Yes. You just need to put them in their place. And the reason I bring this up is because there was a whole article dedicated on ESPN to the fact that some reporter asked Russell Westbrook if he watched the Warriors-Spurs game, and he said no.
Yeah.
And that there's a whole article dedicated to that.
Yeah. Totally not a waste of somebody's website.
Yeah, that was not a waste of my time or space. I didn't actually read the whole thing, though, so
yeah.
It wasn't a complete waste of my time. And obviously what they wanted him to say was, he deserved it, which he kind of did. But Russell Westbrook's smart for not saying it.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's going to have an enormous eye of scrutiny on him this year, and I feel bad for him because I do want him to succeed. In the past, I haven't always liked Russell Westbrook, but I really want him to succeed. Except when he's playing the Jazz. But anyway, we're going to move on to Anthony Davis, who almost beat the Nuggets by himself.
50-point night.
Yeah.
For Davis.
And I did a random little thing. I just took all the different stats and I excluded fouls from this. You know, field goals, assists, steals, blocks, rebounds, whatever. Anthony Davis was responsible for 42.9% of all statistical production. And it's just crazy. And to give you an idea, Russell Westbrook was somewhere around 30, I think, and he had 32 points, some odd rebounds, a bunch of assists. He had almost a triple-double. But Anthony Davis, and again, not counting fouls, he outdid the other starters combined. That's 4 other players combined, all their stats combined. He led them in every category except 3-point attempts, assists, and turnovers. And one of those stats is bad.
Yeah.
That's it. Assists and 3-point attempts. He took 2 3-pointers, had 5 assists. And he outdid every other starter combined by himself.
See, that's why I would say if the Pelicans can pull it together, and obviously we'll get into why that might be a struggle, but if they can pull it together, this could be an MVP kind of year for Anthony Davis. If he plays even just... not even, you know, even just somewhat as good as this. This could be an MVP year for him.
Yeah.
So,
and he'll have an uphill climb with being an MVP candidate, but I do agree he is one of the better players, and he is a really good all-around player. And I was looking into it, and I was thinking, what the crap is wrong with their starters? Although I did look into it, they're missing some of their starters. Tyreke Evans is out. He's one of their better wingmen. He's a guard or small forward, whatever you want to call him. And so they are missing some guys. And so this is an enormous problem. Once they get some people back, Anthony Davis will actually have a team around him that isn't made up of a bunch of scrubs. Yeah.
But, I mean, to step up when you're missing so many key pieces.
Yeah, and again,
that says a lot about him, I think, as a team leader.
Yeah. And so he does step it up, and he does bring it. And so I do believe the Pelicans, they'll be in the fight to be in the playoffs. I don't know if they will. I'm still not as high on the Pelicans as some people are. I do think they'll improve as long as they don't get decimated by injuries as they have been in the past. So we'll see. Now, another phenomenon, I noticed in 2 occasions there are teams playing their wings as point guards. Two different cases. The Bucks, and I am sorry, I will slaughter this guy's name. I really need to practice pronouncing his name, but Giannis Antetokounmpo. I apologize to all the Greeks out there. I just slaughtered his name. Thinking I'll practice his name so I can get it down, because this guy's going to be good, and I'm going to have to know it. He's 6'11", 222 pounds, small forward, who can basically, he's capable of playing point guard. He is an extremely versatile, could play 1 through 5 on the court. Keep your eyes on him. He's going to be good. And then the Rockets, they play James Harden at point guard, which I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, but it worked. James Harden had 17 assists in game one, so apparently he's good at producing assist statistics. I don't know if he's actually a good point guard, because Russell Westbrook gets assists, and he's not a good shot creator other people.
But even to have somebody that can create those assists, you know, and put their other teammates at least in a chance to score, you know, that's I think that's kind of an unsung ability oftentimes. I mean, obviously you need people to score, but to have the person that can set up everybody, I think is really key.
John Stockton's in the Hall of Fame because he could do that so well. Yeah, and really the question is, I was thinking, okay, why would teams go with this kind of strategy? And this probably isn't the perfect explanation, but for me, I feel like you want your best player to have the ball in his hands at all times. LeBron James in Miami was almost the point guard. It was basically him and Dwayne Wade. You know, whoever they were starting at point guard, like Mario Chalmers, he wasn't the guy running the plays. It was LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. And so these guys are just jumping that gap and saying, okay, you're our point guard now, James Harden. Because normally when you reset things, you reset it to your point guard, you run a play through him, and instead of having to, you know, run a screen and get James Harden off a screen so we can get open and get the ball, you're already passing it back to James Harden. He sets things up, he can do his ISO, he can call plays, whatever. He's controlling everything. Because people make the comparison, the point guard is the quarterback on the floor. That's usually the way it is. And when you look at the Jazz, Gordon Hayward has been, in a number of ways, essentially the point guard, because he's been one of the primary playmakers. And now these two teams, the Bucks and the Rockets, are just closing that gap and saying, okay, our best player, as far as playmaking in general, they're both of those guys think they're their best player. We're just going to make you the point guard. You're going to call the plays. You're doing everything. And I guess it makes it easier for them. And I guess it makes it a little easier because they don't have to be really good at off the ball moving, which I think is probably good for James Harden when I consider his level of effort on defense. I don't think he's moving off the ball very well. And considering he's got like the most isolation possessions than basically any other player in the league, that is probably also indicative of the fact that he doesn't move off the ball. He just gets the ball at the top of the key and then does his thing, which he's really good at. You know, step back jumpers, pretending to get his chin kicked in when driving to the basket to draw a foul. You know, James Harden stuff.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't like James Harden, except it broke my heart when I saw Gordon Hayward do the same thing once or twice. Do that same motion. Just jerk your head back like you got mauled in the face by a bear. It's like, come on, people. Even I don't do that.
Although, maybe we'll start.
Yeah, maybe I should, but when I play pickup basketball, that doesn't pass. Like, I can't even draw a charge in pickup basketball. I can get run over, and they'll be like, no blood, no foul. But if I tap your arm, it's a foul. And it's not like I try to. If I could say you did a charge, they'd probably take it. But
I haven't instituted the Jordan rules yet, so.
No, not yet. All right. Well, that's all we got for the NBA today. We've got so much more coming, and I'm super excited for this season. Like I said, I'm a big, huge Jazz fan, and I believe they'll do good things, even though they lost against Portland. And just the NBA is going to be really exciting this year. The Eastern Conference is going to be more competitive, I believe. The Cavs are probably still going to win it, but there's more teams that'll be good. The West, the Warriors aren't invincible, everybody. Go out and beat them if you can rebound. All right, thank you, everyone. My name is Jason Walker.
And I'm Evan Hall.
And thank you for listening to Armchair Champions.